Welcome back to HealthLink On Air. This is your host, Tricia Torrey, every patient's advocate on behalf of University Hospital, making the academic difference in healthcare in the Central New York community. Well, if you have an adolescent in your family, a child or grandchild, then you're going to want to pay close attention to the guest I'm about to introduce to you, because he's going to share some important thoughts about the health of this age group and effective communications. I know of very few people who love and deal with adolescents who can't use that kind of advice. So let me introduce you to Dr. Robert Cavanaugh from University Hospital. Good morning, Dr. Cavanaugh.
Good morning.
Dr. Cavanaugh is a professor of pediatrics and director of adolescent medicine at SUNY Upstate, and has devoted much of his more than 30-year career to working with children ages 12 to 21. You're a brave soul, Dr. Cavanaugh.
Thank you.
But you must be doing something right. You've stuck it out for, 30 years? So you've clearly found your niche. You like working with adolescents, don't you?
I love working with adolescents. I find them to be very needy, very challenging, and often their medical needs are overlooked.
Aha. Very interesting. Well, you know, I've raised two girls, and thankfully they're young adults now, but I remember that first shocking experience. Both of them were, one was 11, one was 12, and I realized they weren't little girls anymore. What is it about this age group? I know they're transitioning through puberty, but what explains their turncoat behaviors?
Well, you're talking about a very special age group now. We call them tweens.
Tweens.
Not quite a child and not quite a teen. That would be the 10, 11, and 12-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going on in their bodies, the changes of puberty, but also their brain is a busy work in progress at the same time. The pubertal changes, the physical changes, are usually pretty obvious to those around them, but what's going on in their head is actually just as important, but it's somewhat hidden from the eye.
We just don't see it.
We just don't see it, yeah. Hidden from view.
Do the mental and emotional changes take place at the same rate?
No. The mental changes are usually divided into three stages. That would be early adolescence, which is 10 to 14 years roughly chronologically, mid-adolescence, 15 to 17 years chronologically, and late adolescence, which is 18 to 21 years. Now, things don't always happen according to schedule. The pubertal changes are going to be a little bit early in girls. The average age of menarche, which is when the menstrual period begins, is around 12 and a half years. That would be the average age in this country. The boys' pubertal changes are a little bit lagging and behind. But what's happening in the mind is all, as I said, a busy work in progress, and it's not necessarily synchronous. What that means is they may be ahead in one area of development and behind in other areas. And the major, what we call psychosocial tasks of the adolescent would be, think of them as the five I's. Identity, they need to establish their identity. They need to become independent. They need to establish interpersonal relationships. They need to have what we call intellectual awakening. And that means they can see things through. A child is in the here and now. An adult can see the future consequences of present actions. And also, adolescents have the fifth eye to work on image, developing their image. And in each stage of adolescent development, early, mid, and late, those five eyes are at a different level of maturation.
So there are maybe like 15 variables in
there.
There
are many variables. So you have the five eye variables, plus you have the physical changes, plus you have all the environmental things that are happening around them with peers, school, let's not leave out school, and what's going on in the family. Well, so there's a lot going on.
Bless their hearts. No wonder it's such a confusing time for them. Obviously, the physical changes between boys and girls are very different. But what about the mental and emotional changes? Do they have the same steps they have to go through?
They have to go through the same steps, but they may be at different levels at different times. Girls tend to mature a little bit more on an emotional basis in terms of social interactions, for example, that eye of interpersonal mm-hmm. relationships. They seem to develop that a little bit sooner. But again, it's very variable within the individual and within the sexes as well.
It is. What affects their maturity more, the biology or the environment?
I think we have to say both. Certainly genes play a very important part. The environment is certainly a very important player here, especially the influence of peers.
Sure.
As they get into the tween age, they seem to find comfort as they are emerging to be independent from families. There's an emotional vacuum created, and to fill this vacuum, they often go to their peers, turn to their peers. And then, as we know, peer pressure becomes more and more important to them. And as they, you know, further develop, somewhere through mid-adolescence, that's the time where the peer influence becomes extremely powerful. That's the stage of adolescent development, again, roughly chronologically 15 to 17, mm-hmm. where risk-taking is at its peak.
Right,
risk-taking. Image awareness is also at its peak, and it's magnified multi-fold during that period of time. Then as they get a little bit older, these things seem to calm down. Parents all of a sudden become a little bit more intelligent.
Yes, amazingly.
And they settle down with more one-on-one relationships. And the peer influence is not as powerful.
I see. Well, you know, I'd like to talk about some of the differences maybe then and now. I was thinking through, if you were working with adolescents 25 or 30 years ago, some of them would be in their 40s now. And what was the difference between their experience and maybe the experiences today? What are some of the things that are the same?
I actually saw an 18-year-old yesterday who came in with her mother, and I cared for her mother.
Oh, my gosh.
When I first came here. The adolescent, I think, has stayed the same. They are very, very special group of patients that really are very, very needy. They are probably the most misunderstood age group of our time.
I would agree with that.
And I would say what they need from us is still the same. What they want from their physician and really from other people is someone that will listen to them, that will talk to them, listen to what they have to say.
Or even value them?
And certainly value them and respect them.
Mm-hmm.
And from the physician's perspective, it's important to earn a relationship of trust and respect. And I use the word earn with emphasis. I need to earn their trust and respect as their physician, but they need to earn my trust and respect too,
mm-hmm.
As the patient, so we could have a good working relationship.
Excellent.
What
excellent.
They need from parents, what they need from grandparents is still the same as well. They need unconditional love and support, and they need the parents, grandparents, family members to stay connected with them.
I used to say to my girls, I don't necessarily have to agree with you, but I'll always love you. I don't have to approve of what you've done, but it doesn't mean I don't love you. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about?
Absolutely. They need to know what you as the parent, as the grandparent, feel, what your values are. They need to know it very clearly over and over again, even if they kind of deviate from the expected
path. Oh, and they do.
And every now and then they do that.
Sure.
Take a little detour into the danger zone. They need to hear these values over and over again. And that is a process that they are undergoing of developing their own value system.
Exactly.
And it is based on the input from those around them, especially the significant people in their lives. The most significant people in the lives of the adolescent would be the parents. What's different between now and 20 years ago is families are not as intact as they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
This is much more difficult. It's a challenge to raise kids when there's a tag team, mom and dad,
yes.
You know, traditionally. And now that's not always the case.
Oh, it wasn't in mine. I was a single parent for 15 years.
Being a single parent is tough.
It was.
And it needs to be understood, I think, that, you know, you're not alone. There mm-hmm. is help out there. Your physicians are out there to help you and guide you, and other healthcare professionals. And your, you know, parents, hopefully, you know, can guide you if you are a single parent. But if there's nobody to guide you, then it becomes more challenging.
Absolutely.
And I salute those parents that are, you know, working day and sometimes day and night and trying to put food on the table.
It's not easy to do. You're right. Talk about risk-taking. What is it about these kids that makes it so difficult for us to keep up with their risk-taking and guide them?
They love to seek adventure. They love thrills. They love challenges. And their mental makeup is such that they have a sense of omnipotence built into their psyche, meaning nothing can happen to me.
Yes.
But it can, and it does. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, these risks are really the most important sources of morbidity and mortality in this age group. Each year, 15,000 adolescents die in this country alone from automotive fatalities. Drugs and alcohol are involved in many of them. Driving under the influence of drugs, alcohol or other drugs, or being a passenger when the driver is drunk or high.
Yeah.
Suicides kill 5,000 teenagers each year in this country, yeah. And homicides as well. So those are the most common causes of sudden death in this age group, and they're all, if you think about it, almost always preventable. So adolescents don't die of heart attacks, lung disease, strokes. They die of what I just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
There are also 1 million pregnancies among the 20 million girls. Most of these are unplanned, unintended. And there are over 3 million reported cases of sexually transmitted diseases.
Oh my gosh. What is it we as parents can do to make sure that our children are less at risk? How can we guide them to make better choices? And we just have a minute to go, so let's hurry.
Okay, again,
up.
You have to be there for them. They have to know that what mom and dad feel, what grandma and grandpa feel. They need to know your value system over and over again. Again, I can't stress that enough. You need to stay connected, and even if they deviated from what you want them to do, mm-hmm. you need to be there for them and help, you know, pick them up when they fall down. And if they don't fall down, then they're never going to grow up, because part of growing up successfully is learning how to fall down, and life goes on. Pick yourself up and move forward.
That is excellent advice. Well, Dr. Robert Cavanaugh, we've learned so much about adolescence this morning. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. It was really my pleasure.
And listeners, we do need to take a break now, but we'll be back shortly. Please stay with us. This is University Hospital's HealthLink on Air on 570 WSYR.